Well, I'm coming to that. I'm coming to that. And of course, Mr. Jeffrey has been moved to higher office. I think what we'll do is, as per your request, some of you, say a nice few words about that. No, I'm not pushing it. I'm not. If you don't, I'll do it. I want to, just for the record. I think, a signal honor for this committee. And so it's only appropriate that you should be, say, well, if you don't have to, but let me hear you. Smuts.
I'm sure that we have all conveyed our congratulations, but we wish to do so also as members of the committee. We wish to say that the Honourable Jeffrey was a gifted legislator, and we trust that he will bring similar skills to his new post in the executive. As a member of the executive, he is now obviously no longer a member of this committee, and as is proper in justice, members of the executive don't frequent the committee unless invited, but I'm sure that I would speak for everyone in saying that we would be delighted to invite both the Deputy Minister and the Minister, perhaps more frequently than we have had the time to do it. It was simply through our own time constraints that we have so seldom invited them to sit with us.
Thank you, Chair. I've served with the Honourable JJ and I, Deputy Minister JJ, since 1999 in the Justice Committee. I think there are a few of us that are still left. And it's a very sad day to see him move on, but we also commend him and wish him well in his new endeavours in the Executive as Deputy Minister. We'll definitely miss his experience, his legal insight, and his sharp wit. And I remember him bringing certain former members to tears with certain comments he made. But all in all, in previous committees, I think it's a substantial loss for the committee, particularly his legal insight and his experience, and of course the way that he would hold departments accountable to a manner that would behove an opposition MP. And I think that was particularly something that we'll lose, that insight. But again, we wish him everything of the best in the executive, and we are sure that he'll be no doubt stirring the pot up there in the executive quite, as is his right and as is his want to do. So we wish him everything of the best. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, all I want to say is I think our meetings are going to be a lot less interesting and probably a lot shorter, but I do think we have already given our congratulations to him, and I would like to do so formally now too. I think it is well deserved, but he will certainly, and I had to tell him most unfortunately that I have to admit that it will be a loss of this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. The disadvantage of speaking towards the tail end, you find that some of the previous speakers have covered what you want to say, or as we used to say, they steal your words. I want to also say that my initial impression was that it's going to be sort of a loss to the Justice Portfolio Committee, but at the same time, it's something that we have to congratulate. I've seen JJ for my first time I came in Parliament as a person who was a hard worker. Sometimes people say a person is a workaholic. In various functions that he was doing, but also in this portfolio committee, I'm not reflecting on other members of the Justice Committee. But he was always pulling very hard, knowledgeable, and there was nothing that he didn't work very hard, was contributing a lot. That is why I see it as we are going, in a way, to miss part of us. Part of us as the justice, part of the community. Thank you, Chairperson. We wish him very well. And then also in his new area, I think he's going to do the same. And I was impressed that this coming Friday he will be representing the Justice Minister in the SAJAI, South African Judicial Education Institute. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Ms. Sheila Shoppes-Tole.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will really miss JJ. And immediately it was announced, I sent him a very long SMS and told him that I'll miss him because I learned a lot from him as a person who is not a legal, having any legal background. I come from the accounting background. I knew very little when I came to this committee, but I've gained a lot from him. But he really reassured him that we'll meet in the study group. So at least I'll still have my lessons. Thank you.
Chairperson, they say as a cat weg is, dan is die muis baas. And I'm just thrilled that he is gone. I mean, firstly, I would like to see whether this committee would be able to pass the legal practice bill now that we have fought so much about. And then obviously the person that's going to replace him, one would want to see that person has the same vigor as JJ.
Oh.
I doubt whether that's going to happen. I mean, he's one of a kind. I've sent him an SMS, but I'm also happy that at least now the meetings will be shorter. And if we don't want to work on a Friday or even on a Thursday or whatever, then we can easily say that without being worried that he's going to have an objection to that. But I wish him well.
Thank you, Chair. To be the last one to say, yes, indeed, we're going to miss JJ, but want to wish him well and congratulate him for his appointment. He's actually been the pillar of strength for all of us across the political parties, and I'm sure all of us are going to miss him. And, indeed, it's a challenge for us to have to work, especially for the ANC, to really have to work without him. We are hoping that we will get a good replacement, and I'm sure we will get a good replacement. And there's me, Kat Vatvechas, the Macy must just wait a bit. We bring another cat. It's in the pipeline. But of course, this committee without JJ is really not going to be the same. And what I liked about him is that he was also a unifier. You see, there's some of the committees that dysfunctional. The Justice Portfolio Committee has always been so functional, and that's why we are so productive, and I think it's because of personalities like JJ. We hope we'll get another person that will really manage to fit into his big boots. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you for all that. I'm grateful for your comments, and I'm sure that we'll find a way of having it passed on to Deputy Minister Jeffrey. Sounds odd saying it that way, though. Yes. Mr. Jeffrey's appointment brings honor to the Portfolio Committee. I think that's obvious. And like you, on the day that I saw it on television, I also sent him my SMS. And I'm sure there were a flood of emails and such like. In my view, his appointment is well-deserved and overdue, in my view. And I'm expressing a personal point of view. And so the Portfolio Committee's loss is the executive's gain. It's a statement that's normally made at a wedding. But I make it here anyway. I was called by a journalist, Wyndham, forgive me if I mention your name, and I said to Wyndham Hartley over the phone, that Mr. Jeffrey's promotion would leave a hole in his Portfolio Committee. I firmly believe that. I mean no disrespect to anyone who serves on this Portfolio Committee, nor do I mean that as an insult to the person who's going to replace Mr. Jeffrey, But again, I'm simply expressing a personal view based on the experiences that I share with Mr. Swart, that from the day Mr. Jeffrey joined this portfolio committee, he made an excellent contribution, and we'll certainly miss him. The Honourable Kivana Majaki is right. He's a unifier. You don't know this, but a lot of people in the ANC always ask us, how do we do it? I said, how do we do what? Well, you guys don't fight. So I said, well, perhaps there's no need to fight. When you differ and disagree, well, you differ and you disagree. And that's it. There's no need to go to war. So apparently in other portfolio committees, they have regular wars and battles. I don't know why. I trust that that spirit remains, notwithstanding the fact that die Kat is weg. Thank you for those kind words. I'm thrilled for Mr. Jeffrey. Yes. So, that's it. We have Henk and Ananda. And I thought we should divert from our program and ask Henk to present, give us a briefing on the report of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development and the amendments on the Protection of Personal Information Bill, because it's now come back to us, and so it's only appropriate that we get a hearing as to the motivation for these amendments. Mr. Dupree?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, the Select Committee approved the bill with amendments on the 12th of June, and the National Council of Provinces approved the bill with amendments on the 18th of June, 2013. If I may just take one step backwards and possibly just explain to you in general where the proposed amendments come from. It is when we prepared for the Select Committee process and especially our briefing, etc., we picked up a few small glitches here and there, Mr. Chair. So most or the majority of the amendments proposed are of a technical nature. And I will point them out to you. The most general amendment that you will find in the proposed amendments are simply to replace a reference to the bill as a 2012 Act to a 2013 Act. Mr. Chair, there is not really consensus whether something like that should be included in amendments or whether it can be corrected administratively. In the past, where we had one or two incorrect references to the number of an act, it was possible to amend that administratively during the final preparation of the bill for submission to the Office of the President. But we decided to include them in the amendments because there are so many. And we thought that it would be more appropriate to do so. I would just like to check what we have done for the advantage of the Select Committee, and then it also is useful here, Mr. Chair, is that we have indicated in the bill itself, as approved by the National Assembly by way of yellow highlights, where those proposed amendments are, just to make for easier reading. So I can refer to that document. The document that I'm going to work from, Mr. Chair, is an extract then from the APC as published on Thursday, 13 June this year. And with your permission, I would like to start off then and take you through the proposed amendments. As far as the contents of the Act is concerned, that is a consequential amendment. We will get to the relevant clause, which is the substantive amendment, but at this stage then, with regard to the contents of the Act, and that is specifically Clause 33, is to ensure that the amendments inserted in Clause 33 is then reflected in the heading of in the contents of and the heading of that specific clause. The next proposed amendment is one could call a substantive amendment, but it's something that we have decided to recommend to the select committee for purposes of clarity. You will recall that Clause 4 is what we referred to as the roadmap clause and provision. So we would like to propose that, or it was proposed by the select committee then, Mr. Chair, that a subsection 5, a new subsection, subclause 5, should be inserted between subclause 4 and the subclause 5 as approved by the National Assembly, where an attempt is made to clarify precisely how the bill impacts on the processing of the personal information of children. And especially then the special personal information. Subclause 5 will then read, the processing of the special personal information of a child is prohibited in terms of sections 26 and 34 unless the provisions of sections 27 and 35 are applicable, in which case, subject to section 37, the conditions for the lawful processing of personal information as referred to in chapter 3 must be complied with. The remaining two amendments there are simply to renumber then the clauses 5 and 6 as they are reflected in the B version of the clause. Clause 6. On page 11 of the bill itself, in line 30, that is merely a technical or a textual amendment, Mr. Chair. The and before the dash does not serve any purpose, and it was proposed that that word should be omitted from that clause, subclause. In clause 18, once again, we have a technical amendment there. If you read clause 18.1H, which starts with the words, any further information such as the, and then Romans 1, 2, and 3 is correct, but Romans 4 and 5 start with the word the, and that amendment is aimed at omitting those two words. So that is also a purely technical amendment. Clause 24 is based on comments that we received via Mr. Jeffrey. The person submitted comments to Mr. Jeffrey. The proposed amendment there is, or the concern that was expressed, Clause 24, of course, deals with the correction of personal information. Subclause 2 then provides that on receipt of a request, in terms of subsection 1, a responsible party must then do certain, take certain steps, for example, correct the information, etc. The concern that was expressed is that there is no indication of the period of the period within which those steps must be taken. The proposal was that a time limit should be imposed, for example, 30 days or 60 days. However, it was eventually accepted that in view of the general nature of the bill and the framework, and then also the general ambit of the specific clause, it might have been more appropriate to refer to or to insert the words as soon as reasonably practicable in order to ensure that the position of a responsible party or the obligation resting on the responsible party can be tested on a case-by-case basis instead of inserting a time limit, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, clause City 1, that is technical, purely technical amendment. We proposed that commas should be inserted just to break the long-winded sentence up and to avoid confusion with regard to which institution we are referring to. We are referring to institutions that are founded on political principles. Clause 32, is also to a certain extent a technical amendment. We were advised by the Council for Medical Schemes that in terms of their legislation, those statutory provisions does not refer to medical aid schemes, but to medical schemes. So the proposed amendments under Clause 32 are aimed at omitting the word aid, just to refer to medical schemes in order to align that with existing legislation. Clause 33 is more of a substantive nature, the proposed amendments there. You will note that in Clause 27, Clause 26, we refer to various different kinds of special personal information, and those different kinds of special personal information do have separate clauses addressing circumstances in addition to Clause 27, where the processing of the personal information may take place, but biometric information does not have a specific clause dealing with the processing. If we look at the definition of biometric information, it's a technique of identifying a person. So, strictly speaking, in that sense, not health information. Although it can be DNA, etc., can be regarded as health information, but then it will automatically fall under 32, and that is why we proposed to the Select Committee that a reference to biometric information should then rather be included in Clause 33. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I would like to go through all the proposed amendments, because if I have to speculate, I think we may want to ponder on this one. So, with your permission, I will and then take questions. Thank you, Chair. Clause 38 is a technical amendment to the extent that the reference in subclause 1 to clause 11 is, strictly speaking, not correct. Reference should actually be made to clauses 11.3 and 11.4, and that amendment aims to address that concern. Clause 40, the amendment there is merely correcting a spelling mistake. Clause 44 is also of a technical nature, Mr. Chair, because in Clause 44.2d there is still a reference to the old information protection principles, which was the term that was used when the bill was introduced. That term was replaced with conditions for the lawful processing of personal information. So also, once again, just a technical amendment. Clause 72 is more of a substantive nature, to the extent that reference to memoranda of understanding entered into between two or more public bodies are to be removed, as well as subclause 2. Subclause 3 will become subclause 2 then. and then paragraph A under the existing subclause 3 will also be omitted, and then paragraphs B and C will be renumbered to paragraphs A and B. Maybe just to give you some background information with regard to this proposed amendment, Mr. Chair, the Financial Services Board made a submission to the Select Committee on certain concerns that they still had. We were requested by the Select Committee to meet with them in order to see whether we could address those concerns. They had two different concerns, the one with regard to Clause 72 and the other, of course, with regard to Clause 38. We were eventually, you will recall, Mr. Chair, that the reference to a memorandum of understanding entered into between two or more public bodies, subclause 2, and then also clause 99(1)(f) were provisions that were inserted as a result of the concerns that they have expressed. We were able to meet with them, and eventually we reached a position where we were in agreement that it is not necessary to refer to these or to have these provisions in clauses 72 and 99. And so it was proposed that those provisions should then be omitted from the respective clauses, and the Select Committee agreed to that. Technically, one could argue or could point out that the provision now looks like the provision as it was when it was introduced in the bill, and the committee, and especially the technical committee, inserted the amendments to accommodate the Financial Services Board. But we were, I think, to a certain extent able to allay their fears, and they agreed that that provisions can be taken out now. Clause 99 is then of a consequential nature as a result of the proposed amendments to Clause 72, to the extent that 99(2)(f), which was the tail provision of the provisions that were inserted on the instance of the Financial Services Board, will now be removed from that provision. That is the proposal, Mr. Chair. And then in 99(9), we merely have a textual amendment just to insert the word A between if civil action, just to improve the language. Clause 106, once again, it's just the correction of a tense mistake. Not a tense as in serious mistake, Mr. Chief. 115, technical, to the extent that we replaced reference to 2012 to 2013. The remainder of the amendments are reflected in the schedule to the bill, and I'm going to summarize them for you by indicating to you that number 1 to 9, those amendments are technical, replacing 2012 with 2013. Number 10 is a substantive amendment to the extent that you will recall, Mr. Chair, that we have amended PAHIA to change the certain obligations which public and private bodies have in terms of the submission of manuals, etc. Now, what we realized when we prepared for the Select Committee was that we neglected to insert this provision in respect of private bodies where it was inserted in terms of this bill in respect of public bodies, because the public and private bodies provisions mirror each other, and that is why it is necessary just to bring this provision in line with its sister provision relating to public bodies being. Mr. Chair, that actually brings me to the end of the briefing, to the extent that the proposed amendments under the schedule numbers 11 right up to 25 are once again then those technical amendments replacing reference to 2012 to 2013. Here and there, for example, 23, funny type of amendment to the extent, and I don't know why it happened, Mr. Chair, but underlining fell out when the bill was printed, so we need to just correct that as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dupuy. Honourable members, questions, comments? Ms. Schaefer?
I'm just kind of quite intrigued as to how you managed to convince the FSB. What did you tell them exactly?
Mr. Chair, if ever, and I've never asked this committee to do that, but I would prefer to exercise my right to silence.
All right.
No, Mr. Chair, no. It's a question. It was. We met on various instances, and we practically worked through the provisions, and we looked at their functions and how they exchanged the information with other countries and what instruments they use to exchange that information, and we were able to indicate to them that 72 caters for the concerns that they had. Of course, in all honesty, we couldn't reach an agreement on 38, but the select committee then made a final decision and accepted the clause as it was approved by the National Assembly, accepting for that reference to 11, 3 and 4 instead of the whole of 11.
Anybody else?
I see that we've got the insertion of biometric information. Is that in line with the DNA bill that is before us or before the police committee? And I see there is a definition of biometrics in the schedule that seems to refer to DNA analysis as well as fingerprinting, and that, so one presumes that's foreseen what is going to be in the DNA bill.
Mr. Chair, to a certain extent, the DNA bill, strictly speaking, is what we would prefer to refer to at this stage as a Clause 6 bill, a Clause 6 in terms of our PPI bill. Because if you look at Clause 6, it provides that, and maybe I could just quickly read it to you. This act does not apply to the processing of personal information by or on behalf of a public body. The purpose of which is the prevention, detection, including the assistance in the identification of proceeds, etc., etc. So strictly speaking, but then there's an important caveat to the extent that adequate safeguards have been established in legislation. So as a starting point, one could argue that the DNA bill is then a Clause 6 bill, but one should always keep in mind that a decision whether those adequate safeguards have been provided for or not is something that may be disputed in future. So that is the one aspect. The proposed amendment with regard to biometrics, the DNA bill was something that we had in mind as sort of a backup provision. However, if you look at the provision itself, the ambit thereof is restricted to either public bodies who by law apply to the criminal law, or then in instances where the biometric information is processed by responsible parties who have been obtained, who have obtained that information in accordance with the law. So it is strictly speaking something that not only could cater for the DNA bill, but that was to a certain extent something that exercised our minds when we proposed that amendment.
What I want to say is not anything arising. I've stayed with this process, but at the conclusion, there's something I'd like to say to you, Mr. Dupree.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Dupree.
Thank you. If there's no other questions, I would just like to bring two additional issues to your attention and maybe receive your permission to proceed with that. We very, on Sunday, we received an indication that clause 19, the heading to clause 19, does not really provide an exact heading of the content. So what we would have wanted to do is, and I think we will be able to do that, but with your permission, of course, is when the D-list, the D-bill, is prepared to correct this administratively.
Good.
And then the other thing that I need to point out to you, Chair, in all honesty, and I must immediately apologize for that. It is a mistake that I have made. I've neglected my duties in that regard, but I have also picked up a few mistakes in our objects memo. And once again, with your permission, I would like to just correct those as well. They are... Many of them are of a technical nature, but I think to do justice to the bill itself, our objects memo should then just be corrected here and there. Maybe I could give you an example or two. On page 71, for example, paragraph 2.5.1, that is an incorrect numbering. Page 73, paragraph 2.7.2, the reference is still made to the clause 11, which is now supposed to be clause 11, 3, and 4. And another example is on page 74, right at the bottom thereof, we still refer to the old term information principle. So we would like to correct that. As I said, Mr. J, just to ensure that our objects memo is a fair reflection of the content of the bill.
Okay. Anything else, honourable members? Smiths.
No. All of that is in order. If we're at the conclusion of this, there's something I would like to say. We started work on this bill in 2009. And the bulk of the work was done by the technical committee with John Jeffrey in the chair. I was the other working member. Dr. Ambrosini attended sporadically. And therefore, it was really us together with Mr. Hink Tupria and Mrs. Ananda Lowe, and we had frequently the very gifted input of Sisa Makaveni, whom it's very nice to see here today. Both Mr. Jeffrey and I thought that this was in its way the most difficult bill we had ever dealt with. We created 9 different working versions before we even got to the point of conclusion and before it came to this committee. It has been a marathon exercise, and I think that thanks are due to especially Hink Tupria and Ananda Lowe, and congratulations for their indefatigable work, their great expertise, and it is wonderful to arrive at the end of this process. The Honourable Jeffrey said to Mrs. Lowe the other day, "What are you going to do now?" And I said to him, "What are you talking about? You said, now that this is over." She is the ranking expert on the protection of data privacy, because she worked on the Law Commission's project on the matter. In which year, Ananda? 2003. She is familiar with the EU's principles, laws, directives, and the people involved with them. And it has been, in fact, a long road, and I hope we don't lose her expertise. But just to an unusual degree, thank you to the two of them for all the work that they put into this process.
All right. I'm grateful to you, Ms. Smuts, for making that statement. I must admit, a lot of hard work has gone into this. And your role in that is paramount. Of course, Mark's role as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me add to that. The entirely voluntary assistance of Mr. Mark Henk, who is by now a very old friend of all of ours. He was a friend of mine before and of Ananda's, I think. In fact, he also participated in the Law Commission's. Henk, I'm not leaving you out of the Law. You didn't sit on the Law Commission, no, you didn't, project. But Mark Henk is an IT expert and attorney from Johannesburg who entirely at his own cost and voluntarily has remained part of this process also right up until this day. And in his absence, we thank him for his very great contribution.
All right. At some point, before I recognize you, Mr. Dupree, at some point I'm going to be curious to hear your views, Ms. Lowe, and yourself, Mr. Dupree, Marx as well, and you, honorable members, how the recent revelations by Julian Snowden, if any, impact on the bill before us. Think about it. I'm convinced that it does, and we may actually need to revisit at some point what we've done here. I've thought a lot about it in this recess period, and I'm convinced that our service providers, I don't know the extent to which the bill regulates what is required of them. There's no question of jurisdiction as well. So there's a lot to think about. So I'm not asking for you to respond at this point, but just to think about it. Needless to say, all of us we concur 100% with Ms. Smith's sentiments with regard to your inputs. Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe my chief director, Mr. Bassett, is not here today, and you have started off by providing your members, the committee, the opportunity to say something with regard to Mr. Jeffrey leaving the committee. And if I may, and I do so in very humbleness, if from the department side, we would just like maybe to indicate to you that it was always an honor and a privilege working not only with the committee, but also then Mr. Jeffrey. And then when I refer to Mr. Jeffrey, I immediately think about the technical committee who worked on this bill and won the cannot but have tremendous admiration for our committee members in the tireless manner that they approach their tasks. It is really appreciated, but especially admired. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
And can I just also say that I concur with everything that Henk has said. Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Until next time. Do you want to vote on it now?
Well, do you not want to look at it first? Do you want to go straight into formal consideration? Honorable members? I don't know. No, I'm aware of that. I just don't want anyone saying to me, oh, we only got these things now and you rushed us to vote. Okay, I... Yeah, that's all, Dean. I just thought, okay. All right. All right, thank you.
Maybe just, I'm going to hand up to you then a document that I have prepared in the format that the committee will approve the amendments. I'm just not sure about the wording on the first page, but I will, in cooperation with Mr. Romano, just fix that for you, and then maybe just to request him just to provide us with an indication as soon as possible whether all the amendments have been approved or not, so that we can start preparing the formal C list and then the D list as well. Thank you, Chair.
All right, fair enough. I think tomorrow. Okay? Thank you.
As long as it now goes to the House, because one of the things to keep in mind is this law, in fact, benefited from the fact that we come so long after Europe and every other jurisdiction, but we've taken the best from all of those laws. But we have been working on this now since 2009. The private sector, especially out there, they know perfectly well that they have to adjust the way they do business. This half answers your question, Chairman, the security of electronic systems and so on. And they've been, in some instances, dragging their feet because they started thinking that this bill would, in fact, never finally come. There are cost implications for them. There are enormous implications in respect of how they look after people's personal information. That's every kind of service provider that you can think of. And it's very important. I mean, we have repeatedly said, it is coming. Prepare yourselves. You know you should start. But the sooner this now goes onto the statute book, really it can't wait much longer. So we have now two or three committee weeks anyway, so it doesn't matter which day of those weeks we do. But all I'm saying is it is actually very important that at the very earliest opportunity after the National Assembly starts sitting, this now finally goes through the National Assembly for concurrence and then to the President for signature, precisely in the interests of the security of electronic systems and of the personal information of South Africans, because they are being robbed blind.
Thank you. All right. We'll deal with these amendments tomorrow.
Okay.
Honourable members. I put the short listing of the South African Human Rights Commission on today's agenda not to say, give me your short listing. Well, hear me out. It's been on the back burner for a while, and I thought it just should serve the committee's purpose to say, let's put it back on the table. Can we give ourselves a date when all of you can submit your shortlists to Mr. Romano, and then we'll bring that to the portfolio committee, and appoint one, two or three people who will look at that and draw up a list when we do the interviews. But I'm in your hands.
You know, it's such a, this may be the worst possible argument, but it is such a load of paper, and I've dragged it here again.
Sorry.
Because I have selected my five or six, but one always needs to bring all the rest in case someone else argues the case for. I had thought we were now going to shortlist today. I was ready last time. I know Steve Swart was ready last time. Can't we just start making, even if we don't consider it the final list, if everybody has their list, can't we see to what degree they coincide? and that we therefore take the work forward quite considerably. How do you feel, Chair?
Members of the ANC, Ms. Schaefer.
Chair, my recollection is that we were waiting for a response from the department, I think, or can't remember who, regarding how many vacancies we actually had to fill. And until we did that, we didn't really want to finalise the shortage.
Yeah.
And also regarding the budget for that.
That's right. Yeah. And I spoke to Deputy Minister Jeffrey yesterday on that point. And the department or the ministry has to persuade Treasury of the need for an additional commissioner, because there's no budget for an additional commissioner. You see, I mean, it's well and good for us to go ahead and appoint a second commissioner when there's no budget for that. And so until then, we can only appoint one. The discussions between the department, the ministry, and Treasury on that matter are being attended to. I don't know when it will be finalized. But for now, we must go ahead and appoint the one to replace late Commissioner Barr. That's the
Dr. Barr. Chair, then I propose that we appoint one person. It was a very nice idea from whoever it was. It was a gesture to say let's appoint two. Pending the re-legislation of the SAHRC's Act. But it's now been how many months since this resolution of financial implication? And the people who suffer are the SAHRC themselves, who ought to have their vacancy filled. So there being no crystal clear indication how long it will take for Treasury and the DOJ to come to some agreement, or the Ministry, I suggest we go ahead and fill the single vacancy.
No, that's Ms. Pilana Majake, followed by Mr. Sibanyoni.
Thanks, Chair. I support the motion that we appoint just the one person, seeing that there's no funds to actually manage to get the second position. And also support the idea that we decide on a date that we will bring the names in, the shortlisting. We just need to agree how many names we need to bring in per member.
Sibanyoni?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also covered to say we continue to appoint one person, but not now as it is. Because when I looked at the notice, it was going to be saying at 4 o'clock, or was it only a draft? And then, but be that as it may, Chairperson, I'm of the view that we need to kickstart the process by coming with a shortlist and thereafter meet as the committee in which we deliberate and appoint that particular person.
Just help me, Mr. Sibanyoni, so that we the process is clear in our minds. There is an intention, is there not, for interviews? Or yes. So we don't just get your shortlist and then from that choose one person. No. Right. Fine. Sure.
Yeah, that's correct. We'll have to also agree how many do we shortlist.
Okay.
And then those people who are shortlisted will be invited for interviews.
May we ask outright, when will the ANC be ready with a shortlist? I mean, I prefer working with individual MPs, but you are presumably going to talk to each other. How long is this going to take? I mean, the first time, we were all ready with our shortlist. How long ago? Many weeks, many months. We're ready. We can start talking. When will you be ready?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, so yes, tomorrow we'll be ready. It can be ready tomorrow and scheduled.
So I must drag this whole bag of paper here again tomorrow.
My apologies, dear. Just bring the shortlist. Don't drag.
Then you have a name that's not in mine, and I have to look at the CV to see what I think about it, etc.
Okay. Ms.
So, Chair, I've got a proposal. Why can't we tomorrow exchange lists between ourselves so we all know who's got who on which list? Then we just bring those CVs the following day, and then we can do this.
Makes sense. Okay. That's done. Now, public protector. You want to be excused? The matter of the allegations of maladministration in the Office of the Public Protector dragged for some time. There's a general feeling amongst members that we should try and get this off our table, as it were. One of the problems we've had, honourable members, is the fact that, generally speaking, most of the people making the allegations wanted to be anonymous. And that creates enormous problems. I'm putting it back on the table. In the recent past, I have received some documents where people have signed their names. I have them here before me. Mr. Romano informs me that he has not received these. And so I'm going to give them to him for distribution. In fairness to you, it's only fair that you read through these. At a later meeting, we'll discuss how to proceed. Seemingly they are new. They're not. Oh.
No, actually, I just wanted to say that the emails received are not related to the complaints. These are just general complaints from members of the public. So they're not related to the dossier that are the public protectors in the parliament. Yeah. About the Office of the Public Protector, but they're not related to the allegations referred to us.
No, they're not. So there's two issues then. These new allegations and what is already before us.
In the light of the fact that these new allegations would come from members of the public, surely we should give the public protector an opportunity to comment on that before we consider that. You know, this is something totally separate from the issue that is germane and which we are dealing with. So I would suggest that we refer that those emails from the members of the public. Yes, we distribute it, but we refer to the public protector for her comments. Thank you.
Yes, of course.
Mr. Chair, I think we've been talking for quite some time now about the fact that we had the Deputy Public Protector to come here to speak to us, and we wanted the Public Protector to come and give her version of events to specific allegations that were of particular concern to us as a committee. Now, I think what we need to do is crystallize those issues, and if we can do that today, then that's all good, you know, the best option. And then make sure that she knows in advance what issues we are particularly wanting answers on, and she can then come and address this committee, because it has been quite some time now since we've heard the matter, and I think it's in the interest of the public protector and all of us that they be finalized now. So I would like to suggest that we put that to her as quickly as possible, that we agree on what specific issues we want to be addressed, and that they exclude issues of management style and so on, that we just stick to the serious allegations that were of concern.
Okay. Are we okay with that, Ms. Filani Majak?
Yes, Chair, I do support the notion that, seeing that we have seen the Deputy Public Protector, and the intention was that after seeing the Deputy Public Protector, the Public Protector will then come and give a version of her story. We should actually proceed like that. But one thing that we have actually indicated at some point was that the committee does not have the capacity to really look at the nitty-gritties of this whole thing, because it's just too many allegations. And I think that's one thing that we need to start looking at, how we are going to proceed. Because when the Public Protector comes here, I think like the Deputy Public Protector, we're not going to interrogate her. It's just a matter of just listening. And then after listening, then there's got to be a process then that unfolds. And I think that's what we need to start looking at, how we are going to deal with this matter.
Can I perhaps suggest a similar process to what we're doing with the Human Rights Commission, that we all submit our list of issues that we want to be addressed to the Secretary, and he can then distribute them amongst the rest of us? And then we can agree on a subsequent day,
like
hopefully this week.
I like that.
I like that too. But Chair, why is everything taking so long? I mean, we had an agenda for today. So why aren't we all here with our shortlist for the SAHRC? Why aren't we all here with our list of, we've discussed this before, our list of which matters we want the Public Protector to respond to? I mean, who isn't really?
All right. If you've got your list, please hand it to the Secretary, Mr. Romano.
Can we not discuss it? Can't we table it? I mean, I would be surprised if the Honourable Lucille doesn't have... She had her ideas ready a long time ago.
Ms. Moss, but Chairman, I said it at the last meeting. I do want us to just think about what precedent we are setting with all these grievances and things like that, especially the ones from the staff, because there should be a grievance procedure within the Office of the Public Protector. And I'm just concerned that if we attend to one grievance, why can't we attend in the future to any type of grievance, especially from staff members? That's just my concern.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we must also emphasize that this was at the request of the Public Protector, requesting the Speaker of Parliament to look at these allegations, and then the Speaker of Parliament saw it wise to request the Justice Portfolio Committee to handle it. I also want to agree with Honourable Swartz to say we have to give the Public Protector, Advocate Matosela, an opportunity at least to respond what has been said about her by the Public Protector, and then we then take the process forward, Chairperson, and come to the conclusion. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, our intention wasn't, as far as I recall, that we actually interrogate specific issues regarding the staff grievances as such, and that part of what we wanted to ask the Public Protector, which we have mentioned before, is what process is in place within the Office of the Public Protector to deal with these kinds of issues. And I mean, there's a concern, because the staff don't really fall under the public service. And there really isn't much alternative for them other than to come to us. We are the ones to whom the Public Protector reports. And I think that certainly was one of our discussion points before, that we would ask her what measures are in place inside the office for people to take their grievances to. but I don't think it was ever the intention. I mean, there were just some serious allegations that came out of all the complaints that were of concern, particularly relating to appointment processes, tenders inflated, and financial irregularities, which, in my view, should be sent, the financials should be sent to the Auditor General. But at least we can make a decision as a committee to refer it.
Perhaps one thing we could do, Chair, is for the OISD, which does now exist, and for the advocate to play perhaps a more proactive role in these things occur. Because this is not the first round of complaints from staff of the public protector that we've received. And Ms. Schaefer is right that not all of them, although some are members of the Public Service Association, I seem to remember, from the last hearing. But the fact is still they oughtn't to be. They work for a constitutional institution which is accountable only to us. Therefore, I'm afraid the issues do in the end come to us, but this is perhaps where the OISD can start playing a really good role, because we cannot be bogged down with these issues.
Thanks, Chair. Indeed, I think we shouldn't actually get too much into it as a committee. And that's why I wouldn't support the idea that we go look at all of these allegations and decide which ones we want her to come and talk to. Because once you initiate the process, it means we are part of it. We are just going to sincerely listen and then decide as to what we need to do with the matter. And I think what we need to actually also do is just to put that line that divides the public complaints and the ones in the office. And I think the ones that have been hanging for too long are the ones that have taken place in her office. And that's why then there should be a mechanism we actually decide on that would actually then help to finalize this. Somewhere I hear suggestions that maybe the Auditor General could be the right office to do it, and there's also the office in the office of the Speaker that could actually do it. We just need to conclude as to what mechanism we think we need to utilize towards conclusion of this. But at the same time, I think it's still important procedurally for us to have the public protector coming in now that the deputy has been here.
I don't agree that she mustn't come and give us answers on anything. I'm saying that there's some matters that are important that we need to have direct answers on, and which she must have advance notice of, so she can give us those answers. The deputy has made certain comments and allegations and came to us in a public meeting. The former deputy, and to put certain complaints on the record, and I think it's only fair and right, and we decided this long ago, that the public protector herself can come and answer those. But I think up front we could agree maybe certain issues must be referred to other bodies, and I think that's what we need to clarify. What do we actually want her to come and tell us about straight away? Or we might only make that decision after we've heard what she has to say, because she might have dealt with those things already within the organisation, or she might be able to satisfy us of those. But I do think we need explanations.
I think let's not try to pick on things. Leave the whole thing as a package, so that if it's going to be looked into by another structure, let's just forward everything. Of course, as a committee, we may develop interest in certain areas, but let's try to avoid that, to allow this process to flow in a way that can actually have also fairness in it, because if we're going to start picking on certain areas and other areas are left, like I said earlier, we are entering into a process that we think we don't have enough capacity for. We don't want to actually deal with it here. We are just listening to decide as to where to channel it. And my feeling is that let her come in, and of course we may have different interests in terms of things that have been mentioned by the deputy that are also in the integrity report that have been written there as to what is happening around them. For example, the fraud allegations about the CEO and things like that. Those are some of the issues that the committee previously, I could see, developed interest in. But I'm sure we're not going to actually look at them like one by one to say maybe it's a fraud case and this and that, if we are not the ones that are going to investigate the matter. If we are, if we're going to investigate the whole thing, it's okay, we can proceed, but we don't have the capacity. It's going to have to be done somewhere. And I think everything needs to be done elsewhere, not here. We will get the report, and once we've got the report, I'm sure the report will then actually have some kind of recommendations for us, if it's a report that has been commissioned by the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Constitution of the Republic of South Africa gives committees, members of parliament, three responsibilities: lawmaking, public participation, and the oversight role. So it is our job, it is our responsibility. We cannot say the Auditor General will do what and what. We've got to look into those things. The oversight role to hold the people who use the state money accountable is our job. So once we have considered these things, we can decide that on this issue, we will ask the Auditor General to investigate further, or another institution to investigate further. But we cannot dodge our responsibility. The oversight role is the responsibility of Parliament. Thank you.
Chair, just firstly, if I remember correctly, there were some issues that were referred for further investigation by the police. I think that would be good to get feedback as to that process. But secondly, I'm in agreement with a lot of the sentiments that have been expressed. What we are doing here is exercising oversight. The fact that the public protector asked the speaker for us to look at it, and it's come to us. So I agree, firstly, that the public protector should have an opportunity to respond to what was said in public. But the next step then is going to be crucial. We are not in a position to investigate and make factual findings. We would probably at the end of the day make broad recommendations as to how to deal with grievances by staff members in Chapter 9 institutions. Should the OISD do that? Who does it? There's obviously a lacuna in that regard that needs to be filled. We as members of Parliament can and must exercise oversight, but we are not a tribunal that cross-examines or makes factual findings. So it's extremely difficult in weighing up evidence. We're not going to be doing that. We will be given an exercise in audi artem partem by allowing the public protector to respond to what was said, but particularly in view that she asked that she brought these to our attention, and it's to give her that opportunity to clarify issues, and then I think we will be in a position to make recommendations as to where the process then should be taken forward, and who should then be able to make factual findings. And when it comes to financial issues, the Auditor General would be the opportune person that will be able to make findings on accounting and financial accountability. Other issues, whether there's a need for criminal investigation, whatever that might be, whether that should continue. But I tend to agree that we do not have the capacity to investigate every little issue. Clearly not, and we need to be careful that we don't set that precedent. But it's only that we only considered to do this or considering this because there is this lacuna as to when grievances from members of staff come, they are accountable to us, Chapter 9 institutions, and that needs to be addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, maybe just by way of a question, I want to ask, what do we do about staff members who have submitted their grievances anonymously? Because remember, in the past we were saying maybe to add some more flesh, they should perhaps approach the chairperson Nicodemusly and Nicodemusly. yes, so that chairperson, maybe at least we put some value. I'm not saying we have to disregard those grievances that have been submitted. They are there, and then also it made the public protector to be concerned about it. But if these staff members are guaranteed some degree of either, I would say, confidentiality or protection, if they have got something to be afraid or to be scared of, I think it would have been a better
a better option, Chairperson. Because we, at the end of the day, we shall have had Deputy Public Protector, and after the public, the former Deputy Public Protector, and the after the Public Protector herself. And then, what value do we put to the other, I would say, grievances which have been submitted by other staff members? Thank you, Chairperson.
I've listened carefully to you, and I understand what you're saying, Mr. Sibanyoni. I do agree with Mr. Swart that we are not a tribunal, and we shouldn't pretend that we're going to be. We lack the capacity, because in addition to the staff, how do we address complaints from the ordinary public? And that's where Mr. Swatch is right. There seems to be a lacuna that we're going to have to apply our minds to and come up with possible solutions. Because you see, if you receive an allegation from a member of the public or a staff member who wishes to remain anonymous, and we refer such an allegation or complaint to the public, she'll turn around and say, well, when did this happen? Where did it happen? Who is this person? I have the right to interrogate this person's allegations. And there you are. The whole thing just flounders. And she'll be perfectly within her rights to say so. And she has already done so. Now, in fairness to the office here in Parliament supporting the institutions that support Adopt Democracy, the OISD, they have attempted to crystallize the matter. And I'm going to read them out to you. I'm going to find a way of getting this to you if we haven't already done so, Mr. Romano. They are as follows. Non-compliance with policy with regard to overseas travel and transfer of staff. That's number one. Number two, no clear demarcation of roles between the Deputy Public Protector and the Chief Executive Officer. Three, inadequate allocation of resources to the Deputy Public Protector. Four, questionable internal controls. And here we refer to the decisions of the Governance Integrity Committee and the Executive Committee that were not taken seriously. And finally, fruitless expenditure. And there's a report that's referred to as the IENI report in this regard. Of course, there's the matter of the allegations against the Chief Executive Officer. You all know that that is in the hands of the National Prosecuting Authority, and therefore there's nothing further that we can say or do about that because the NPA is independent when it comes to prosecutions, etc. However, nothing prevents you from inquiring as to progress. I think there's nothing wrong with us asking the NPA whether they've taken a decision, and if not, how much longer it will take. But other than that, there's nothing more we can do about that. And as far as I'm concerned, that matter is in the right place, and we should leave it there. So those are the issues that have been crystallized by the OISD. Christine and Julian and MC, if there are other matters you feel that we should include here, please don't hesitate to raise your hands and bring it to our attention. Mrs. Schaefer, you too? Yes, by all means.
Can I do it now?
Yes, please.
I was particularly concerned also about allegations regarding the appointment of senior staff Molefe and Tetwa. There were allegations that they were previously suspended, well, Mteto was previously suspended from SALGA, and that he didn't disclose certain crucial information, and I would like to know more about that. I would also like to know about the allegations of inflated tenders. And I had a particular concern, as I said earlier, I would like to know what mechanisms the public protector does have in place for staff who are aggrieved. How does it currently work?
Complaints.
Yes. And then I also had a particular concern about an allegation that was made about the DA in Kimberley, and I wanted her to respond to that as well.
Hasn't she done that?
No, not that I can recall.
Okay.
The other one she did, the Midwall one she had, but not the Kimberley.
Not Kimberley.
Yeah. There were specific allegations that the office in Kimberley were receiving bribes from the DA, and I would like to know if she has any merit, if there's any merit in it whatsoever, and if so, I want details of that.
Kimberley office, eh? Kimberley office. Mr. Swart?
Jay, I'm just thinking that truly a lot of the relationship between the staff and the public protector is governed by labour law issues. And
okay.
And we can maybe look into that, our researcher, because clearly if it is so, and there are two different categories there, there are those that are seconded from the Public Service Act that will fall under the public service labour legislation, and then there's others that will be governed by our labour relations regime as well. Now, to what degree are they covered by grievance procedures that are set out in the Labour Relations Act or any of that legislation? So we might be looking into issues that are already, although the issues that are raised here are other issues besides the contractual labour relations issues. There are broader policy issues of travel that we would need responses on. But I'd be interested to know to what degree from our researchers whether there is. Yeah, and I'm sure the OISD will look into that as well, because it might well be covered already by existing legislation.
Well,
grievance procedures.
Sure.
Yeah.
If it is, and I agree with you, it probably is, then it would be important for that staff
to be aware of,
aware of what processes they should follow. Okay? Yeah.
So there might well be a lacuna, as we say, but on the other hand, there might be existing procedures that are in place. So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to find out. Thank you.
Advocate Chwayo, at any stage you want to make input, please raise your hands and we'll recognize you. Yes, ma'am.
Chairperson, I would like to know more about the irregular tenders and the weak internal control issues. And the financial issues.
Yeah, you see, this is Mr. Romano is just reminding me that if we need to be careful, if we raise the question of tenders, we need to be specific and say which tender do we believe was awarded irregularly. I don't think it's appropriate, and yeah, I agree with the public protector, that we should simply say, well, we are told tenders have been issued irregularly. They should be a little more specific, which ones. In fairness. And then hopefully we'll get a response. Sorry, somebody, Christine? Yes.
There was also an issue of consultants being appointed who were obviously had some kind of acquaintance.
Appointment of consultants.
And I think there was a name mentioned.
And the allegation was that this person was related to someone. To the CEO. Okay. Nungosi, can you ascertain for us the name of this consultant who is allegedly
somehow related to, we have the name, all right, fine. Mr. Romano tells me we do have the name. Advocate Kachoya?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say, in the last meeting of the committee that I attended, these issues were raised, and the list that we're giving is the list that we gave even then, and the committee had agreed that it is not an investigative body, but a body that is information gathering and processing so that it can advise the National Assembly, so that when it submits its report recommending either investigation or anything to the National Assembly, the National Assembly can then take a resolution whether it should appoint or commission the Auditor General or any other structure out there that could then go and do the thorough investigation. The report of the Auditor General would then come back to Parliament, and Parliament would then start exercising its oversight responsibility, now using the report from the Auditor General. At this point, we are dealing with a letter that was sent, referred by the Speaker to this committee, just for purposes of information gathering and advising the House as to how to take this matter forward. And the Speaker was referring a letter received from the Public Protector, and the Public Protector requesting that the anonymous allegations be investigated. So the National Assembly is therefore, after the letter referred by the Speaker to this committee, awaiting a report from this committee as to how it should then handle the whole saga. So in a way, I am basically agreeing with the members that say this is not a body that should be, you know, trying to hear both sides of the whole thing, except just to gather information from all of them and then be in a position to advise the National Assembly in an informed kind of a fashion. I would then say that would be on the procedural side of things. And now, substantively speaking, there was also an issue that was saying from the committee that the committee might want to ascertain from the Public Protector as to whether there are any internal complaint mechanisms so that this issue of anonymous letters can be addressed in a proper fashion, whether to say it's a matter that should be addressed internally or even to recommend that the Public Protector should look at a situation where some internal, you know, complaints mechanisms are established within that office. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Mr. Schaefer?
I want to clarify the process now. What are we going to do from now?
Well, I'm going to... I'm not sure. I think all members have this, but if they don't, I must make sure they have this. All right. You said, remember, Mr. Schaefer, you said we need to crystallize the relevant issues. And what this document seeks to do is precisely that. Yes, you do. Okay. So if you do have that, and you agreed with the manner in which they've crystallized the issues, you sorry?
Added extras.
Yes, okay, I was coming to that, right? Then in addition to what they've done there, there's the issue of the appointment of Molefe and Tetwa and the allegations surrounding them. There's the internal staff complaints mechanisms and processes, essentially what we're asking the Public Protector to do is put those in place if they are not already there. I suspect that mechanism is in the hands of the Chief Executive Officer. The problem that arises is if there are complaints against that very same Chief Executive Officer and the Public Protector herself, and so that would need to be clarified. The issue raised by Mrs. Schaefer, the allegations regarding the Kimberley Office of the Public Protector, that staff members received bribes by the DA, clearly that has to be clarified. To my mind, that's a criminal offence, and so it has to be cleared up. And then finally, the appointment of a consultant who is allegedly related to the chief executive officer. Do I have them? Have I left anything out?
I just forgot to add, Mr. Chair, if I may, regarding the Molefe and Mthethwa, there was also an issue particularly relating to their security vetting, which was also mentioned in respect of other staff. So we just need to clarify the security vetting of staff, too.
Security vetting, okay. So have I, other than your addition now, Ms. Schaefer, have I covered everything, honourable members? Mr. Sibanyoni, I honestly don't know how we're going to deal with the anonymous complaints, whether they're by staff or the public. As a lawyer, you'll understand the difficulty we're faced. We're not even a law enforcement authority. We're just a very humble portfolio committee of the National Assembly. I don't know how we deal with them now and in the future. It's extremely difficult. Ms. Pilani Machate.
Like we said, sir, we are not, you don't have the capacity to investigate this. Leave it to the system or process that will go in depth into the matter. Whether it could be the Auditor General or whatever will come out of the OIS office.
Nkosi, would you agree that there's clearly a lacuna? I'm not putting you on the spot when I'm it's not my intention, but I tend to agree with Mr. Swartz. There's clearly a gap here, and I don't have a solution at this point.
Chairperson, I am of the view that that gap or lacuna shouldn't really exist, in the sense that this room is a political structure, the members of parliament. And therefore, these are the members that are entrusted with the constitutional mandate of legislation making, public participation, and oversight. So if you look at the OISG, we more on the side of parliamentary services, not members of parliament. So we basically are here as a support to the members of parliament. And when we come here, we come to offer our expertise in terms of our qualifications and in terms of our experience around here. The decisions necessarily would have to be taken by this structure. The decisions that pertain to this structure have to be taken by this structure, maybe, yes, with our advice. And our advice is merely an advice. It doesn't necessarily have to be taken by this forum. It is just an advice. We're happy to sit and make our advice because that's what we get paid for. And we understand if it's not taken precisely because that's what we get paid for, again, a chairperson. So if our coming into picture when the members speak would be saying to us, politically speaking, this is what we understand as the members. Can you, OISD, go and look at it using a technical eye now? And then come and advise us as this forum as to how we can then move forward as these politicians, Chairperson. So I'm just thinking, Chairperson, that that is how it is. And perhaps to take this opportunity and then try and make an addition to what Honorable Majake has said. Chairperson, I am of the view that at this point, you are busy trying to get some points that these members would kind of used to lead the public protector to put her own side of the story when the committee invites her as part of the committee gathering information, not as part of the committee investigating, but as part of the committee's responsibility to gather this information and process it for the decision whether to investigate or not to investigate, or resolution by the National Assembly chairperson. So I'm just thinking that we need to be getting to a point where we are saying, yes, we have got this point, and we are agreeing that we must invite the public protector to come and talk to us as the portfolio committee, and we hear what she has to say, and we put together that information in the form of a report and make our recommendations to the National Assembly. And we, in this case, talking about the members of parliament with me as an advisor chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Elgit, for that. Is there any more? Now, I'm informed, honourable members, by Mr. Romano that Advocate Maron Sena is available to appear before us on the 2nd of August. Okay. Yes. That's you know, I'm also I wanted off our table. All right.
Okay.
Come on. Well, your predictions, honourable members, looks like they are coming true. That we're gonna finish sooner.
Can we be clear about what we're doing tomorrow?
Tomorrow,
everybody is bringing their
legal
shortlists.
Right. We hand them in.
Right.
That'll take 5 minutes if that.
Right.
Once we're done with that, deliberations on the legal practice board.
Very good.
Will Mr. Bassett and Cole be present here? Yeah. Yes. So, just those two items. So, Mr. Sibagnoni? Yes.
Now, on that matter, when we last sat on the LPB, we went up to close 69, right? Tomorrow, are we simply resuming there? Are we looking at something specific like the Ombud, because we have new research material done on comparative models? Are we having big-ticket discussions? What is your thinking?
You remember we had given Mr. Bassett and Cole certain instructions as well. So in addition to those outstanding clauses that we still haven't looked at, he would brief us on those instructions we had given him. Recall that he was grateful for the fact that we were going to have a break, and it gave him then that breathing space in which to then draft further amendments. The question of the debate on the two chambers, I'm not sure we should do it tomorrow. Possibly we can do it on Thursday. So that, that gives everyone enough sufficient notice, okay? I don't see why we shouldn't have that debate on Thursday. Okay. There is the little matter of the GCB. You must have received their letter, their email, expressing alarm and concern that now we're taking decisions and they haven't had a second bite of the chip. Or was it the Law Society? It was Law Society. My apologies. But still, and I was like, well, hang on, we haven't taken any decisions.
you know, the fact that there's been sort of, okay, that's fine, we can go ahead, and that doesn't constitute a formal decision.
Not that there's anything in the world to stop us taking decisions.
Of course, yes.
I have read the supplementary correspondence from the LSSA, and it's very useful.
Sure.
But perhaps I didn't see this particular item.
No, we did say, look, you know, if we need to engage with them further, we'll do so.
Welcomed any ongoing submissions.
Yes, of course.
Yes. Maybe that gave them the impression that we can't do exactly what we want.
Ms. Adams?
Chairperson, there was an article in the newspaper of recent about some letter that Advocate Semenya have submitted to your office. I don't know whether you've circulated it to us, but is it possible that we can have copies of that, please?
We see Advocate Semenya. That I certainly have not seen, and I would like.
What is it? Thank you so much. Now, the committee secretary, on your behalf, distributed to us a program for the committee, for the session. I would just like to indicate from my side two things that I have done. I have spoken about both of them in every justice budget vote since 2010. I have gazetted two private members' bills. The first concerns the appointment mechanism for the National Director of Public Prosecutions and the NPA in its and its independence. That one in particular I've raised every single year in debate. The second private member's bill is concerns the composition of the Judicial Service Commission and also the criteria that it applies. That particular private member's bill draws on the National Development Plan and some of the ideas that it postulates. Both of these bills are constitutional amendments, and therefore they each have to go through certain procedures, which they've done. Each one of them has gone to the provincial legislatures for 30 days for comments, if any. The deadline for the first bill, the 18th, will be over by about the 26th. After that point, once we see what the provincial legislatures have sent, after the NCOP has had an opportunity to have a debate, I will introduce the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill. That's the one dealing with the National Prosecuting Authority and the appointment of a National Director of Public Prosecution. That will then be referred by the Speaker, of course, to our committee. So I mention it as a courtesy, Chairman, and I've given you personally a copy of each of the gazetted bills. I mention it as a courtesy because it's something that we would then deal with as a committee, and I sincerely hope that both will enjoy your favourable consideration. There is more than one way of doing both of the bills that I've done, and I would therefore benefit from your wisdom and debate. The Judicial Services Amendment, the 19th, is still with the provinces. Its 30-day notice period will only expire later. The NCOP will deal with that one slightly differently, since they will also be legislating on it. But both of those, just so that you know, Chair, will come to us at some point, I would think before the end of this quarter, referred by the Speaker. And then
the more expeditiously we can deal with them, the happier I will be. But I would think that realistically the JSC would not be dealt with before end of year. The NBA one you may wish to deal with earlier. But thank you very much for hearing me out. I've given you copies. I've published op-eds in various newspapers. And if you wish, we can either wait till they are formally introduced into the National Assembly before members receive copies, or if you wish, I can electronically, through the Secretary, send copies to all of the committee members. If that isn't too much reading, we already have a lot on our plate.
Sounds lovely.
Hello, that's fine. You've been long.
I'm fine. How are you?
All right.
How are you doing?
I'm Melissa Q. Prime Media, Eyewitness News.
Oh.
And writing for City Press.
Oh.
So long.
How did that start?
Well, I mean, I do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Eyewitness News. And then the City Press kind of turns in around. So it's more long term or. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're
looking a little
bit older
than you. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah